I was asked to say something about the Vedic conception of time. It's an interesting topic. There's actually quite a number of things to be said. First of all, the basic definition of time is that time is an active potency of the Supreme in manipulating the material energy. So time is an active agency in that sense. In modern science, time actually turns out to play the role of a number or a geometric coordinate. But in the Vedic scheme of things, it's something active. There are different dimensions of time. The starting point in the Vedic system is what is called atomic time. This is an interesting conception. There's the, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's mentioned here, one can estimate time by measuring the movement of the atomic combination of bodies. Time is the potency of the Almighty Personality of Godhead, Hari, who controls all physical movement, although he's not visible in the physical world. Atomic time is measured according to its covering a particular atomic space. That time which covers the unmanifest aggregate of all atoms is called the great time. So that's the starting point of a description of time in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that time is based on the action of atoms. So that's the starting point. There are a number of units of time of various sizes. In particular, there is one unit called the truti, which is various sizes are indicated for that. But one figure that I have for that is it's 1/33,750th of a second. That's one unit of time mentioned in Vedic literature. So they subdivided time quite finely. So going beyond that, there are various units of time that apply to the period of ordinary human life during the day. One interesting unit is called the prana. Prana is about 4 seconds. And actually, prana means a breath. So that's, if you can think it, if you're breathing gently, a breath would take about 4 seconds, let's say. At least that's a rough figure. But this prana also has another meaning. It turns out that the number of pranas in one 24-hour day is the same as the number of minutes of arc in a circle. So what that comes down to then is that with each 4 seconds, or about with each breath, the stars and planets rotate through 1 minute of arc. And that's happening all the time. So it sort of gives you an idea of the inevitability of time. Actually, the rotation of the planetary systems in the Vedic system is called the Kala Chakra, which means the wheel of time. Kala is the word for time. So what is happening there is that there's the polar axis that goes through the North Star, or close to it. So if you could look at the sky at night, let's say sometimes people do this with a time exposure camera. You have a camera in which the shutter is open for several hours. You'll see that all the stars and planets and so on are rotating around one axis. So that rotation makes one complete revolution in a day. So every 4 seconds or every breath, the whole system of stars and planets rotates for 1 minute of arc. So it turns out that many of the dimensions of time, or units of time, in the Vedic system relate to astronomy, interestingly enough. There are quite a number of sophisticated descriptions of different units of time. For example, there's the solar day. That's the time from sunrise to another sunrise. But that's distinguished from something called a sidereal day, which is the time from when a given star rises on the horizon to the time that that star rises again. And that's different from the solar day due to the fact that the sun is moving every day with respect to the stars. So another unit is called the lunar day. This is 1/30th of a month. So a month is the time, say, from new moon to a new moon. So that's about 29 and some fraction days of 24 hours. So a 30th of that is therefore less than one 24-hour day. So that's called a lunar day, or a tithi. And a codicy, for example, is a tithi. So that's why there are certain complexities involved in deciding at what time a codicy is. So these are some units of time. So these are earthly measures of time. But beyond this, there are different measures of time applying to the demigods. So the smallest of these is a month. It's described that 1 month is the period of the day and night of the Pitris. Pitris are a classification of beings not quite on the level of demigods, but actually the word Pitri is commonly translated as the ancestors. But when a person dies and they have some pious credit, they can take birth as one of these Pitris. They live in a somewhat nice situation within the universe. So it's described that their day and night period is 1 month. And also there's a Vedic book called the Surya Siddhanta, which describes them as having a residence on the moon, which would be logical if their day and night is a period of 1 month. They also have a residence in what is known as the lower planetary systems of the universe. So beyond that, the day and night of the demigods is 1 year on the Earth. So there's some astronomical points here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that there are 360 days in a year, which is an interesting feature. This apparently is a very ancient system, because you'll find that the ancient Egyptians initially had 360 days in a year. Later they shifted to 365. Also the Chinese had 360 at one point. So it's a very ancient system. Of course, in that system, every few years what you do is add an extra month in order to make up the complete time for a year of 365 and a quarter days. So the year of the demigods then is, or the day of the demigods is 1 year for people on the earth. It's described that 360 days of the demigods is 1 year of the demigods. So there's a time scale for the demigods, or devas. So this is broken into periods of time called yugas. So this brings you up to another time scale in the universe. So it's described that there are four yugas called Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. And in terms of the years of the demigods, actually these yugas go in succession of increasing shortness. The first one is 4,000 years of the demigods, and then 3,000, 2,000, and 1,000 years of the demigods. And they have what are called sandhya periods at the beginning and end, each of which is a tenth of that yuga. So in particular, for the last one, 1,000 years plus a tenth at either end gives you 1,200 years of the demigods, and that's known as the Kali Yuga. And at the beginning, there's a 100-year period of the demigods, which is the Sandhya. Since 1 year of the demigods is 360 years of this earth, you multiply all these numbers by 360 to convert it into earth years. So that means the Kali Yuga takes, if you multiply that out, a total of 432,000 years. But the 100-year Sandhya comes out then to 36,000 years. And that's significant because it's described that various religious activities take place in particular during these Sandhya periods at the beginnings and ends of the Yugas. So in particular, we're now within the Yuga Sandhya of the Kali Yuga. And this is the period in which Lord Chaitanya's movement takes place. So that's the significance there. So the total period for the four yugas is 4,320,000 years. So it's described that these yugas repeat in a cycle. So one can speak of that 4,320,000 year period as a yuga cycle. So the next division of time beyond that is what's called a Manu period. And that's 71 yuga cycles. So that lasts for about 306 million years. So the lifespan period of most of the major demigods described in the Bhagavatam lasts for that period of time. So beyond that, there are 14 such Manu periods in what is called one day of Brahma. And there are also intermediate periods separating these Manus. So that comes to a total of 1,000 yuga cycles. So one day of the chief demigod within the universe, who's known as Brahma, comes to 4,320 million years. So that's the daytime period of Brahma, as it's described. And then an equivalent period corresponds to the nighttime of Brahma. And it's described that Brahma lives for 100 years made of days and nights of that length. So if you, it's described that right now Brahma is about 50 years old in terms of his time span. So that comes to a period of about, it's about 155 trillion years have passed in the time period of Brahma. So this is the kind of time scale that you have in the Vedic system. It's described that in one sense time is relative. These different systems or units of time can be described in terms of earth years, but subjectively they're experienced in different ways by different living beings. There's specific information on this, for example, with regard to Brahma. It's said that Brahma lives for 100 years of his own time. And in fact, for Brahma, the passage of time goes at a different rate than it does for us, although apparently he can speed things up so as to experience time at our level also. But in any case, there's one interesting story about a king named Kukudmi, who had a daughter named Revati. This king wanted to obtain a husband for his daughter. So he apparently wasn't an ordinary king. So he went up to the planet of Brahma, Brahma Loka, to personally ask Brahma to select a husband for his daughter. So when he and his daughter arrived there, Brahma was busy because he was listening to a concert being put on by the Gandharvas. It's a race of celestial musicians. So this took a certain period of time. And when the concert was over, Brahma asked the king what he wanted. He expressed his desire. And Brahma then laughed and said that, well, all of the different possible husbands that you had in mind for your daughter have died a long time ago. In fact, the entire civilization that you were living in has vanished into dust, and no one even remembers the names of any of the people who are living within that civilization. Because it seems that while the king was listening to the concert, about 120 million years had passed on the earth. So this gives an idea of the different time scales. Actually, it's interesting. This forms a sort of superficial parallel with some ideas that you'll find in the theory of relativity. There's a calculation you can do according to which, in that theory, if someone were to travel in a spaceship, let's say, at some let's say percentage of the speed of light, say close to 100%, travel around, say, in a big circle and come back, then according to that calculation, the person on the spaceship would have aged, let's say, 1 year. But on the Earth, thousands of years would have passed. You can do calculations like that. So in this case, though, it's not a matter of travel near the speed of light exactly, but when one enters into the environment of Brahma's realm within the universe, the rate of passage of time is different. So one moment there corresponds to the passage of a long period of time on the Earth. So that's one aspect of the passage of time. So let's see. There are various other aspects to this. One curious aspect concerning the nature of time in the Vedic system is that events are known in advance. And this also, curiously enough, has some relationship with the theory of relativity. It seems that in that theory, time is like a geometrical coordinate, as I mentioned in the beginning. And the effect that that has is that, in effect, all events that are going to occur are already there. This is the picture that emerges in the theory of relativity. Because time is sort of like space. And so events in the future are there, so to speak, in a different region of space where we are. In fact, in that theory, it's possible to shift between the dimensions of space and the dimensions of time. So they're sort of interchangeable. So according to that idea, everything that is going to happen exists in its sort of timeless domain. And everything that has already happened also exists. So it's interesting. Einstein, in fact, completely accepted this whole picture of things. And he even used it to console a widow at one point. Einstein had a friend named Besso, actually from, I guess, childhood even. And when they were both quite old, the friend died. So Einstein said to his friend's widow that, well, you don't have to lament over the passing of your husband because, in fact, there's no such thing as the passage of time. The passage of time is simply an illusion. This was the point Einstein tried to make. Well, actually, in his theory, that would have to be true because everything is there, all laid out, so to speak. According to this idea, a human being is what he would call a space-time worm. You can imagine this worm. At one end, there's a baby, and at the other end, say, an old man, and in between, all the different stages, and it's all just there. This is the picture. Well, this seems a little bit artificial in many ways. It turns out there, though, that according to the Vedic system, it's also true that all the different events that are going to take place and that have taken place are there in some fashion. They're laid out in a continuum. And that being the case, it is possible for some great sages to see the future. For example, this is a capacity known as Trikala Gya, or knowing the three phases of time, past, present, and future. And one example of this would be the sage named Narada Muni. On one occasion, he was visiting Lord Krishna, and he began to describe how Krishna would be doing different things in the future. He would be killing Kamsa, and he would engage in the Battle of Kurukshetra, and so many different things. So he was describing all these events in advance. So in one sense, then, all the different events are also laid out in the Vedic system. So one might ask, well then, how does this relate to the whole question of free will? And is it, how does that relate also to the idea we have that we are able to act and that we're doing different things? Is this feeling we have that we're acting with the passage of time just an illusion? This was Einstein's idea. So it turns out the ingredient that is missing from the picture you have in modern physics, but which is present in the Vedic scheme, is that in the Vedic system, you have the description of how the spirit soul is related to the material continuum. So time, as described in the Vedic system, applies to the material world. Actually, the spirit soul is not under the jurisdiction of time, but the material body is. So the arrangement is set up within the material world so that in accordance with the desires of the different spirit souls, the different interactions of the material elements are controlled and conducted by the action of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is omniscient, all the different actions and reactions are worked out once and for all. However, this is in accordance with the desires of the spirit souls. So in one sense then, you could say there's no possibility of changing everything because Krishna knows everything that is going to happen at any point in time. And in fact, that implication is necessarily there if you think that God is omniscient. If God knows everything, then he can't be surprised concerning what the future is going to be. So at the same time, though, because all of the different interactions of the material elements and so forth are carried out in accordance with the desires of the living entities, and also karma, which is another element, there is at the same time free will. Because it cannot be said that the different actions and reactions that are taking place are not as desired by the living entities. So the reason that this picture is different from the picture you have in physics, say in the theory of relativity, is that in the physical picture, the only thing that exists is the material system. And so the different actions and reactions occur according to physical laws. And according then to the picture you have in the theory of relativity, the whole thing is worked out as one complete picture, which is just there. And all the different parts of that picture relate to one another according to the laws. And that's the total story. So there's no question of free will, because really there's nothing to be free in that picture. There's just the physical system, and that's all that exists. So in the Vedic scheme, the total history of the interaction of the material elements is also worked out, and it's also actually there, so that a sage like Narada Muni could see it in advance if he's given the potency to see that. And that potency is granted by Krishna. But the whole thing is worked out in relation with the desires of the spirit souls, the actual living entities. So since in the Vedic system, there's something there to be free, you can have free will. You don't just have the material continuum. At the same time, however, Krishna knows everything that is going to happen. That's the nature of the position of God, being able to know everything. But there's no contradiction there. It's just like, in one sense, we can see that in ordinary life, in the example of, let's say, a young child. It's a somewhat crude example, but you may know what a young child is going to do, but that doesn't mean that the young child doesn't act according to its will, even though you know exactly what it is in advance. So similarly, Krishna knows everything that is happening. So that is another aspect of time. The spirit soul is under the jurisdiction of time as long as the spirit soul is caught within the material universe. The soul also can exist in a liberated state, completely free from any influence of matter. Yeah?
When a so-called mystical moment happens, what's the relation of that to the spirit soul? Time tends to stand still for the individual.
Well, what happens, as I was describing, from the point of view of the experience of time, there are different scales of time. I mentioned that story of the king. He began to experience time on a different scale because he went into a different environment within the material world. So even within the same body, it is possible to experience time subjectively on different scales. Now, if one has a purely spiritual experience, that would be totally beyond time. There's an interesting description. In the Brahma Samhita, there's a description here of what the spiritual world is like. And it's kind of interesting. I'll just read this. It mentions a number of things. Time gets mentioned toward the end here. So the description is, I worship that transcendental seat known as Swetadweep, where as loving consorts, the Lakshmis, in their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty, where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world.
This is 100% bliss, and everything is everything else.
Yeah, this is the spiritual world. So this is described, and you can actually know that in this world, although it says only a very few self-realized souls actually realize this. But the feature of time here, it's interesting the way it's described. In transcendental time, nothing passes away. So we were describing how going up through the system within the material universe, there are different rates of passage of time. It's not that Brahma, however, is sort of like acting in slow motion. His consciousness can do more, so to speak, within any given moment of time. So the final state of time is spiritual time. And in the situation of spiritual time, in one sense, time stops because nothing passes away. But in another sense, there are all these activities which are being described. In fact, there are pastimes in the spiritual world. Of course, the word in Sanskrit is lila. But in English, pastime would seem to mean that time is passing. But at the same time, no time is passing. So you have a sort of paradoxical situation in the spiritual world in which everything is present all at once, and at the same time, time is passing in the sense that different events occur. Nothing is ever lost. So one refers to the eternal pastimes of Krishna. They have different variegated aspects, and yet they eternally exist, and they are eternally enjoyed within the spiritual world. So from the point of view of material experience, it's hard to understand what that is like. Although if you extrapolate from even an experience of a timeless moment in this world to its ultimate limit, one could get some idea of what the spiritual experience would be like. But the only way to really know is to go to the spiritual world. Actually, one interesting aspect of time as described in the spiritual world is this is very similar to the principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which describes the relation between Krishna and his energies. Because Krishna is one, and yet he has many different energies which are non-different from himself. So how can that be? Well, Lord Chaitanya explained that there's actually a fundamental axiomatic principle of spiritual knowledge, which he described as Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, or inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. And the idea there is that Krishna is one, but at the same time he has variety. And on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, oneness and variety are there simultaneously. So we see in time, on the spiritual level, it's a similar situation. There are events, and at the same time, nothing ever passes away. So you have oneness and variety within time on the spiritual platform. Yeah?
Is it fair to say that Krishna consciousness is a scientific method in order to arrive at this state, make the possibility arrive?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yes, is this just theory, or is it possible to actually experience this? But it is possible. And the situation is that the spirit soul in the materially conditioned state is forced to experience the passage of material time. So, of course, the nature of this material time is that we're sort of moved through the sequence of material events in which things, some things are in the future and we haven't experienced them yet. Some things are happening right now and some things are going into the past. It's like that with every breath, the universe revolves by 1 minute of arc, and it's inexorable and inevitable. So, but this state of affairs for the spirit soul is not the only situation. One can enter into this spiritual realm of existence. And that's what the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness really is, to be able to reach that level of spiritual existence.
So we really are not going to make a choice as far as our incarnations in the future or our liberation.
Well, you do make the choice. Krishna knows what it...
How do you make the choice?
Well, you make the choice in terms of your desire, just like it's all worked out. But because you're desiring in a certain way, that's why Krishna has worked that out to happen in that way. Because he knows what you'll desire. He also knows the point where you will desire to be free from all this. Actually, in the Brihat Bhagavatamritam, it's interesting, it's the story of a person named Gopa Kumara. It's a description of his spiritual journey, so to speak. So at a certain point in his life, he met a guru. Actually, he was living in Vrindavan. He met a self-realized soul, and he was taught by that self-realized soul to chant the holy name of the Lord, and he began to do this. But many long years passed, and different things happened. And so it's a description of his experience. And it described that he went through the different levels of the universe. He spent time in Svargaloka as a demigod. He went up to Janaloka and Tapaloka, which are still higher planetary systems. He even spent millions and millions of years as a Brahma at one point. Finally, after going through all these different experiences, he came to Vaikuntha, and he met Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. And Lord Vishnu said, well, I knew that in this birth, referring to the one back in Vrindavan when he met his guru, I knew that at this point you would turn to me. And it was so long that you didn't turn to me. I just was hoping that you would do that. But since I knew that you would turn back to me during this birth, I put you in contact with this guru. And so now at last you've come back to me. So this was the description.